Chapter 16.
If you feel the flood within you, do not fret. God is calling you home.
Reverend Brother Morrison's Judgment Day Sermon. Cormac kicks me awake the next morning. His designer boot-clad foot hits the edge of my mattress and waves around like a worm sticking out of a hole. Shit, did he notice the missing supplies? Did he catch me sneaking back in last night? What the hell do you want? I snap. You're late. His foot disappears just before he knocks aside the bedsheet curtain. I pull my blanket up to my nose. We're heading out, and Nick wants you with us. Get cracking. Great. I got back from Reformation late, and now the sun is barely up. I can't change if you're watching me. Piss off. Well, hurry up. Cormac drops the sheet and leaves. I press the heels of my hands into my face and give myself 3 seconds to rest before shoving myself out of bed. This time, it's me, Nick, Cormac, and Faith, which makes sense because Aisha has been a mess recently and Salvador skipped the last meeting, which is never a good sign. Plus, with the way Salvador was being stared at last time, I wouldn't blame them for not wanting to come. I help Faith pull the cart, and I think she smiles, but it doesn't get to her eyes. How's Aisha holding up? I ask her on the way, while we're cutting across a street littered with potholes. The best she can, Faith sighs. Sadaf is with her now. I know she doesn't need a babysitter, but I'm still worried about her. She can hold her own, Cormac cuts in. Nick's eyes flick to him preemptively. She's a grown-up. She's 18. She's younger than us both. And yet we're carting around the elementary schooler. I snort. I'm 16. Jesus, you're 16? Cormac looks to Faith and Nick in turn, like one might also see the obvious absurdity of having a slightly younger teenager in a militia made of teenagers. No wonder you didn't do shit at the church. Easy, Nick warns. Why are we even bringing him if all he does is stand there or hide? I bare my teeth under my mask. It would solve everything if I just lay it out for him. I'm the reason the Grace didn't tear his head off at the church the moment they realized he was there. I'm the reason he's not just as dead as those angels. I'm turning into a monster, and I'm using this monster to help him survive. Nick slams the flat of his arm into Cormac's chest and pushes him back. Aisha already did a number on you, he says, so I'm not going to repeat it, but do everyone a favor and shut up. And you're still defending him? Cormac sneers in Nick's face. God. Nobody likes the way that sounds. We all get a little too quiet. Or maybe we're just as quiet as we should be, walking through a city like this. We meet the vanguard at the same pavilion in Wagner Commons. The body at the tree shows the days of rot, sagging against the ropes, skin mottled and eaten away by scavengers. The sad trees and skyscrapers feel more oppressive than they had before. Everything has eyes. Everything is watching, trying to catch a glimpse of Seraph, the flood creeping out from my veins. If we really do walk by faith and not by sight, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. Then I have faith that every damn thing in this city knows what's wrong with me, and it's worming its way into my head with everything else. Morning, kids, Joey chirps, helping his buddies haul their cart up on the table. The others, with their patches and stocky body armor, make a semicircle around us like we'll lunge for the supplies if we aren't held back. What have you been up to? You called us awful quick. He isn't happy to be back, no matter what his tone says. It's in the way his squad holds their shoulders, the way they study us. Of course the Vanguard isn't happy. They don't want to be this deep in the city. They don't want to be this close to us. They don't want to give their supplies to a bunch of kids. But they made a deal, and now they have to live with it. Nick says, let's see it.
skipping the pleasantries. Joey and a second man, the one who holds his gun weirdly at his crotch, tear the tarp off their cart. There it is. Water and food and socks, masks and bandages and painkillers, replacements for what I stole for Theo. All right, Joey says. Pay up. Cormac hands over the bag to the woman, who holds it with one hand and a rifle against her chest with the other. They're mirrors of each other, and for the moment when they're both holding the ears, they look like they're going to lunge and wrestle each other down to the concrete. They don't. She takes the ears, plastic-looking dead things, and counts them. She holds every one up to the sun between the skyscrapers, checks that each is from the left. Faith stares at the cracks in the floor, at the grass coming up between her boots. Cormac watches Joey, and Nick watches the rafters. I watch the city. That's why I see the girl. At first, I'm not sure what I'm looking at. Maybe another corpse across the pond, one I hadn't noticed my first time at the Commons, clothes fluttering in the breeze coming in low over the grass. Maybe a deer on its hind legs to reach a tree's softer branches. But there's hair held back with a clip, torn jeans, and a shirt stained all the way down the front with rot. Nick. I move my lips, but I'm not sure any sounds come out. Nick. The time it takes for Nick to look at me, figure out something's wrong, and track my gaze across the pond is probably less than 2 seconds, but it feels like forever. And when Nick sucks in a sharp breath, that's the death blow. That's when everyone notices it at once. Something is very, very wrong. There's a girl across the pond. She's 11, maybe 12, the same age as one of the boys who died on the floor of Reformation Faith Evangelical Church, whose ear sits in that bag. The age of the tiny skeletons Dad and I found while crossing Atchison, curled in bed when their parents realized the world was burning and it would be better for the little ones to die quickly. She moves slowly, too slowly, dragging one foot behind her. Ah, shit, Joey mutters, pulling his rifle to his front. We got a sick one. No, 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 he's going to shoot her. Cormac takes the safety off his gun, pushing through the crowd to the edge of the pavilion. Seraph burns in my throat, right where the flood comes up. They can't do this. She's a kid. She's harmless. Just like the choir boys were harmless. They had weapons. We did what we had to do. Cormac, Faith says, voice trembling. What are you doing? Cormac doesn't look at her. Don't play stupid. He's going to shoot her. Her foot catches on a rock. She stumbles, and sludge falls from her mouth to the grass. She makes an awful keening noise, barely human. Nick winces. The fingers on his right hand stretch so much he's going to shatter something. I whisper, so quietly I'm barely speaking. Please go. Go, they're going to hurt you. I remember when the Grace stood over me and a pile of angel bodies. When the Grace at the cafe stared into my eyes, recognizing me for what I am. When the Grace in the rescue mission threw Nick to the ground to protect me. When the Grace broke down a door to flee the angels. When the nest of the not-quite-dead in Reformation cried for me. I'll be good. I'll be good. I promise. I don't want them to hurt you too. Please. Go. Nothing happens. The girl hits the gravel path. The cracks in her skin are visible now, breaking open like a bloated corpse. God, the woman in the vanguard whispers. What the hell? I'm gonna need you to back up, Cormac calls out, sharp and commanding, everything that Joey is trying and failing to be. The members of the vanguard look at one another warily. Cormac's gaze does not falter. We will fire. Get away.
Nothing's happening. It's not working. Her eyes are too bright. She's still too alive. The flood is devouring her, but it hasn't devoured enough. My words mean nothing. She's not a Grace. She's just a scared little girl. The same kind of little girl I was when Mom took me to New Nazareth, when she became more of a monster than the heathens, the people lost to the devil, who would be sacrificed to the Lord to save our souls and theirs in turn. Or maybe she'd always been that way. I can't remember these days. I said, back up! Cormac snaps. No. I say it before I can stop myself, grabbing his sleeve. Put that down. What? Just trust me. Cormac coughs out a sick-sounding noise. Trust you? Joey says, what the hell are you talking about? She's not a monster, I say. She's a kid. I could have said the same for the choir boys. I could always say the same for something else. If you won't talk to her, I will. Joey says, talk to her. Faith says, Benji, don't. Cormac says, don't you dare. Nick says nothing. Nick is the only person whose opinion I give a shit about. I step off the concrete foundation and into the grass. The sun soaks into my black clothes, turns what should be winter into near summer, burning the earth like God's wrath setting fire to the grasses and trees. We meet between the pavilion and the pond, on the edge of the path. Her head lolls, and her eyes whirl like a scared animal. Her breathing is wet and labored, her lungs full of fluid, dissolving from the inside, turning into something else, the same thing that's happening to me. Oh God, this is me. This is me. Hey, I murmur. Soft nonsense, anything to calm her, to keep her from screaming. This is me. This is me. Hey there, she says, sick, burbling up with each word. It hurts. This is me. If Nick hadn't found me, I would have become a half-dead kid wandering the city, stumbling up to the first person I saw, begging for help they couldn't give. My skin cracking, black shit coming up my throat as my organs are eaten away. I am still going to be this, no matter what. Just with four walls and some people who might not kill me. Might. Might. I know it hurts, I whisper, but you need to leave. It's going to hurt more if you keep walking toward us. She stares, but her eyes aren't focused on me. She doesn't have long. You need to get away. Get away! Almost like this can make up for the dead boys in Reformation, for the ears in that bag, for what the watch has to do to keep our people safe, alive, and okay. Instead of Seraph's warmth, there is a deep, rough sound. The sound of grinding teeth, of breaking bones. Her face shatters into a spray of pieces, coming apart in chunks barely held together with stretches of sinew and flood, eyes, teeth, tongue. Rot splatters my mask and hair. Her fingers curl back and bones tear out into claws. She shrieks loud enough she could bring the world down around us, and she yanks me closer by the lapels of my jacket until her massive, dripping teeth are inches from my face. I say, stop! She stops, trembling, as her body crumbles and breaks apart around her. She stops. And there's a crack, like thunder. And her body jerks once, crack, again. Black-red blood seeps out of her shirt as she stumbles and tries to hold on to me, but it isn't enough, and she hits the grass, dead. Her body doesn't make nearly enough noise for how loud it feels. Exodus 21, verses 23 through 25. But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Those boys died in Reformation, and she will die in turn, because that is how the world works. In what world was my God ever a benevolent one? I didn't even try to save them. So what gives me the right to save her just to make myself feel better? How dare I call myself good? How dare I even try? She convulses once. Her insides leak into the dirt just like Dad's insides did. Her face broken like Dad's face. Bile rises in the back of my throat, and I swallow it because I can't throw up here, not in front of the Vanguard and everyone else. My eyes water with the strain of it, and it's the closest I've come to crying in a long time. I hate it. A stick snaps behind me. I turn, trying to breathe and failing. Nick is stepping down from the pavilion. Every member of the Vanguard has their guns trained on me. He holds out a new mask, taken from the Vanguard's cart, still wrapped in plastic. "Catch," he says. He tosses it to me. I fumble. It hits the grass, and he backs away to let me pick it up. We do the same dance with a rag taken from the Vanguard stash, wet with water from Faith's bottle. I clean myself and show off the gore-stained rag, fingers splayed. It goes on the ground, too. Everybody waits. We wait a long time. Long enough that a flock of birds comes to the trees and sweat trickles down my spine, pooling in the excess material of my sports bra. Long enough that my feet start to hurt from standing so still. The body smells, but I'm used to it. I stand in the sun with a dead girl until I finally say, "None of it got in my mouth." "Or your eyes," Joey says. "Or my eyes." I think some of it did, but it doesn't matter. "I'm fine." "She didn't bite you or claw you?" "I'm fine." "Unzip your jacket." I do what Joey asks, even though they can make out the curve of my chest. I even pull down the collar of my shirt so they can see the skin her claws grazed. There's no mark. Finally, Joey relents. He nods, and I walk back up to the pavilion, trying not to notice the way the other members of the Vanguard keep too close an eye on me, too hard a grip on their weapons. The lady in the Vanguard doesn't bother counting the rest of the ears. She dumps them out, gives them one good look, and says, "Take the supplies and leave." We get every box and every crate, but it feels just as hollow as failure. Halfway back to the Elk, Faith calls an apologetic stop for a leg cramp, and Cormac takes the opportunity to drag me behind a tractor trailer. I've been thinking about the girl the entire walk, and I barely recognize that Cormac is in my face until he's shoving me. I hit the side of the truck and my guts burn, but slowly. A dying fire, exhausted and smothered. I snap. "What?" It takes Cormac a second of seething to put words together. His face flushed almost as red as his hair, pieces of it sticking to his forehead, and when he does, he says, "Do you have any idea how badly you just fucked us over?" The girl's broken face swallows me whole when I blink. I want to stick a finger down my throat and get it all out. "I messed up. Leave me alone." "Who knows if the Vanguard is going to answer us next time we call?" He jabs a finger into my chest, right into the empty space of my sports bra. As much as I would love to grab Cormac's hand and bend it back so hard it snaps at the wrist, I don't. "And it's on you. Even if Nick won't say it, I will. When we run out of food, I'll make sure everybody knows it's your fault." "Nick won't let you," I say. "I don't give a shit. He'll come to his senses. He'll admit it. Because you want to know something? You want to hear something, Ben?" He comes up close. Too close.
close enough that his hair gets in my face, close enough that I can feel how warm he is. If it weren't for the mask, I could have tasted him. Cormac says, "Nick's been calling you an